Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the top of Yud Chet Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is quoting a Braita, which it will later dissect, because the Braita seemingly on face value is incomprehensible. Tan Rabbanan, Yesh Bivri, She'en Bivriya. There are certain things that apply to an Ebed Ivri that do not apply to an Amma Ivriya. Yesh Bivriya, She'en Bivri. And there are certain things applicable to an Amma Ivriya that are not relevant by an Ebed Ivri. Yesh bivri, these are the items that are unique or special to an Eved Ivri. Shu yotzei bishanim, ubi yovel, ubi mitat ha'adon. That he is released with the expiry of the years, the 6 years, if he bumps into the yovel, or with the death of the adon. Mashen kein bi'ivriya, which is not true in an ama ivriya, which, again, on face value makes no sense, because an ama ivriya is also released by shanim, by Yovel and Mitat Adon. Yesh bivriya she hare ivriya yotza besimanim ve'enen nimkeret v'nistet v'umfadim ota bal korcho. Mashakein enkein bivri. So then, by the ivriya, the ama ivriya, she has certain items that are not applicable to an Eved Ivri. Number one is she goes out with puberty. That is something that we know is unique to an ama ivriya, not an Eved Ivri. She cannot be sold twice. And the third thing is, umifadim ota bal korcho. We redeem her against the will of whom is not clear here. Mashen kein bivri, which is not applicable by an Eved Ivri. And right away, the Gemara goes to discuss each of these items. Amar, yesh bivri she'en bivriya. There are certain items that apply to an Eved Ivri, not to an Amma Ivriya. Viraminhi, how could you say that? Our Mishnah says, yeter alav Amma Ivriya shekona atzma b'simanim. That the Amma Ivriya is released in all the same ways that an Eved Ivri is released, just with the addition of Simanim, with the addition of puberty. So it's the earlier of, by the Eved Ivri, it's Shanim, Yovel, Mitat Adon. And here, for the Amma Ivriya, you would just add on Simanim. But that means that it's not things that the Eved Ivri has that the Amma Ivriya does not have. It's Amar Rav Sheshet, Kagon Shi Ya'ada. It's a case where the Adon took her as a wife. Not only did he buy her as an Amma Ivriya, he eventually converted that acquisition into Kiddushin and he marries her. It says, Yada, Pshita, Gita Bayo. Meaning, if she's already married to him, then of course she can't go out like an Eved Ivri, because now she's a full-fledged wife to the individual and she requires a get. So then what's even the Havamin? If that's what's going on in this Braita, then the Braita telling you that this applies to an Eved Ivri, not an Amma Ivriya, that's obvious. The Amma Ivriya, who's married now, of course, requires a get. So, ma'u detema, I would have thought, lo livatla hilchata mina, that the din of Amma Ivriya will not leave her. Kamash malon, that it does leave her. So the havamina, or the possibility is here, that even if Ye'ud was created over here and he married her, that she would still have a din of an Amma Ivriya, which means that even in this marriage, she would be able to walk away from the marriage, either because she came of age, because the years had passed, for the Yovel had come, and then she could walk away from the marriage. Whether she could walk away from the marriage, and that's it, and everything would be terminated, or she'd walk away from the marriage and then could demand a get, or compel a get, in the case is not clear here from the Gemara. But the Havamina would have been that she still remains or still has aspects of being an Amma Ivriya here and not simply a married woman to this Adon. And that's because of the nature of how the marriage came about. She started as an Amma Ivriya and then that was translated or transferred into a marriage. So therefore it has aspects of marriage to it and aspects of Amma Ivriya to it. Where it says, Yihochi, if the case is about Yehud, Amma Yehutza b'simanim. Then why does she leave when she has simanim? Hachikamar. This is what it means. Im lo ya'ada. If he didn't perform yehud with her, yotza af bisimanim. She also goes out with simanim. So that's the idea, being that in addition to the normal vehicles for release, which here are suppressed because she had yehud, and therefore she's now married to the Adon, there is an additional vehicle or mechanism for release when she doesn't have Yehud, and that is Simanim. So now the Gemara moves on to the next part of the Braita. Venenim keret v'nishneit. So we already dealt with the aspects that the Ivri has that the Ivriya does not have. Because David Ivri has all of these release mechanisms no matter what. He will definitely be released by one of these items because there is no other alternative for the Eved Ivri except for Ritzi'ah, which is not mentioned by the Braita, but here the Braita is mentioning methods of release, not methods of enslavement or additional enslavement. On the other hand, for the Amah HaIvriyah, there are different ways or paths that she could go. There's the path of remaining in Amah HaIvriyah where she would have the same ways to be released as the Eved Ivri plus Simanim. Whereas there's another path that she can take, which is that she is then married to the Adon. And being married to the Adon, then she becomes a full-fledged wife of the Adon, requires a get, and is released. And then the world of Amah HaIvriyah no longer applies to her at all. And that's what's being spoken about in the ratio of the Braita, as well as the issue of Simanim. But then the Braita continues and says that an Amah HaIvriyah can be sold once, but not again. There are two implications from that. One is that she can't be sold twice. Number two is that an Eved Ivri could be sold twice. That's what the Gemara says, Michlal, the Eved Ivri, Nimkar v'nishne. It's possible to sell an Eved Ivri once, and then sell him again. Abaat Anyo. Don't we have a Braita? Bignevato. Bignevato is the source for the fact that an Eved Ivri is created through being sold into servitude in order to pay for his gneva. That comes out of the psukim by machteret. It says, im bi machteret yimatze aganav, fukav ameit, ein lo damim. So, baba machteret, the halacha, that is someone who comes to kill or will kill because of the circumstances, then you have the right in self-defense to kill him and preempt him. Im zacha shemesh alav, damim lo. If already it's clear that this individual will not kill the Balabite, or he's not there to defend himself with his life, then you cannot preemptively kill him. And then if you do, it would be murder. Then it says, Shalem Yishalem, he has to pay for that which he stole. Im ein lo, if he does not have the means to pay for it, Vinim kar b'gnevato. He is sold in his gneva or because of his gneva. So here we have a braita, batanya. Bignevato. When it says he sold in his gneva, that is a limiting factor or a miut, which says bignevato below gufelo. He has to pay off the gneva, which is the keren, the principal amount that he owes, but the kefil, the penalty that doubles the payment that he has to make because of the gneva, he cannot be sold into servitude to make payment on the kefil, only on the keren. Bignevato velo bizamamo. He can be sold into slavery for his gneva, but not for his zamam. Zamam here is from the word like edim zomimim. So Rashi over here interprets it as a case where they came to testify against an individual who had stolen, and to be mechayev him for that gneva, keren and kefel. Then they are found to be edim zomimim. They are found to be edim zomimim. If kasher zamam lasot l'achiv, is that they have to pay. The edim zomim now have to pay the amount that they were going to cause this individual to pay. But now they don't have the means to pay for it. So therefore, nimkar b'gnevato, you would think you would sell him for that gneva. Lo b'zamamo. That's the way Rashi interprets it. Other Rishonim do not like this explanation. The Rambam in particular gives a different explanation, which is somewhat changed by the Tur when he brings it to Halacha, which is one of two possibilities, which is either they testified about an individual, which is like the Rambam, that they testified about an individual that he had stolen. He was caught, prosecuted, and then sold into slavery. So they come and testify that this guy was made into an Eved Ivri already. So now they come and testified, and then they're found to be Edim Zomamim. So technically, Kasher Zamam Lasod Achiv would mean that they should be sold into servitude like the other individual was sold into servitude. The answer is, b'gnevato v'lo b'zamamo. Only if you were the thief are you put into servitude, and not if you are the one who testified against the thief, you are found to be an aid zomeim. So in that case, you would get malkot, you would not be sold into slavery. That's what the Rambam formulates it. The reason being that Rashi's interpretation is difficult because we know that it has to be particularly gneva in order to be sold into slavery. Even gezel is not enough of a reason to be sold into servitude as an Eved Ivri. It particularly has to be gneva. Rashi is making a claim here that because they were found as Edim Zomamim when they were testifying against someone, now they have to pay money. because they can't make the payment, they're going to be sold into servitude. That seems unrealistic given that it's such a narrow scope of who is sold into servitude. It's only a ganav. But there you're an eid zomei, so it shouldn't work that way. So the Rambam learns it literally, that you are testifying against someone that they were sold into slavery, which would then demand that you are sold into slavery to match that punishment. The answer in the end is, velo bizamamo. The nuanced version of that, brought to Alocha, is that you testify not against someone who had already stolen and was prosecuted and convicted that they had to go into servitude, but rather over here you are testifying about someone who stole, and then because they're unable to pay, they will be placed into servitude as an Eved Ivri, and then you're caught as an Eid Zomim. So in that case, would you be placed into servitude as an Eved Ivri to do kasher zamam lasot achiv? Meaning that it's not about the money. It's about the fact that the result from your testimony would be that he would be in servitude. So maybe that should be kasher zamam lasot achiv. The answer is velo bizamamo. So those are three different versions of what it means. Again, Rashi, and then the problems with Rashi, and that leads to the Rambam, and then a nuance on the Rambam. Bignei vato, kevin shenimkar pamachat, shuv iata roshai lemochro. Says that once he is sold once, you cannot sell him again. So that would go against the deal we just had from the Braita, which says that he could be sold in multiple times. Samarova lokasho. That's not a problem. Kan gnevachat. Kan bishte gnevot. Makes a difference whether it was one gneva or two gnevot. So now Rashi interprets it as kan bine gnevachat, which is gnevachat in one theft. Pamachat, that you can only be sold once. Dimein shavek kol gnevato, if it doesn't add up to the entire theft, enu nimkar bishvil chetzia, you can't be sold because of half of it. Ukli yotze, and then when you are released, you'll be sold in again to make up the deficit. So if the gneva is greater than the value that can be generated in the sale of him for 6 years, then we don't say, okay, we'll sell him once. When the 6 years are done, we'll sell him again to make up the other half. That's b'gneva achat. On the other hand, when you're talking about shtei gnevot, v'aydek tani v'nimkar v'nishneh b'shtei gnevot, afilu lo amad b'din, ad shegadav shnehem. Even if he was never brought to court until he stole twice, and he's not valuable enough, or the sale will not generate enough proceeds to cover his debts here, or his gneva, nevertheless, because it was two different acts of gneva, we will sell him twice. We'll sell him once to pay for the first gneva, and then we'll sell him again to pay for the second gneva. That's the way Rashi interprets it. You can already see that Tosafot brings Perish HaKuntris. He says, Vekasho. He says, it's difficult. Mashi Perish B'gneva Chat, Enu Chuzer V'nimkar, Delo Ati Yoloka Rabbanan V'loka Rabbi Elazar. Which is the problem that we're going to have upcoming here, Shitot of the Rabbanan and the Rabbi Eliezer, who explained the Shita about when or how many times you can sell an Eved Ivri. The way Rashi is explaining it now, it matches none of those opinions. He's saying, B'nei Avachat, you can be sold once, you can't be sold a second time. Even though your value does not cover the debt or the gneva that you undertook. So, Tosafot then says, V'chach perishri, kan b'nei Avachat, in one gneva, nimkar v'chozer v'nimkar, ad shishalim kol gneva. The way that Rav is reading it is that if it's one gneva, you can keep reselling him until he makes amends, until he pays off that gneva. Whereas, aval b'shtei gnevot, lo yimkor elapam achat. B'shtei gnevot, he can only be sold once, and not more than once, because you can only get into this predicament basically once, which is that he stole, and now he's going to be sold to make up that monies. That's only true by one gneva, it's not true by shnei gnevot. Now the Gemara or Abaye asks on Rava's explanation, Abaye, b'gnevato tuva mashma. What you are suggesting is that the word gneva has a meaning because it says gnevato, which is b'gneva shelo, with his theft. So you're saying that's in the singular form. So that means that b'gneva achat and not b'shtei gnevot. That's the limo that is happening. What Abaye says is, that b'gnevato tuva mashma, as Rashi notes here, many times there are words that are used in the singular form, and yet they mean plural. Which is, for instance, in Yonah, he quotes, u'behema rabah, or in Shmot, it says, Vadaga asher b'yor meita. So over there, it's not talking about one fish. It's not talking about one animal. It's talking about animals in general, fish in general. The equivalent in English where you have a word like fish, which means both the plural form and the singular form. And so gnevato could have that same meaning. Gnevato does not mean one gneva and not multiple gnevot. It just means his theft. His theft could be a single action of thievery, or his theft can be all of his actions of thievery. The same word or the same description would be used over here. And therefore, you can't argue that gnevato means the singular and not the plural form. Ela amar Abaye. So Abaye now has an alternative view. Lo kasho. Kan ba'adam echad. Kan b'shnei b'nei adam. It has to do whether it's one person or multiple people. So as Rashi explains over here, ba'adam echad she'amad b'din b'bat achat. Enu nimkar v'nishneh. If he ends up in Beit Din in one time, then he can't be sold multiple times, even on multiple gnevot. Because the word gneva can mean multiple thieveries, and therefore he could be technically sold multiple times, but that's only if he appears in court multiple times. If he appears in court once, even though it's encompassing many gnevot, then it is one punishment of selling, no more than one punishment of selling. So that's why, because it's written in gneva, gnevato, means no matter how many gnevot there are, you can only be sold once. On the other hand, in the case where it's two different people who take him to court on two different instances, over there he can be sold on each one of those gnevot, meaning that's the singular form. Each gneva will suffice to sell him into slavery. That's the way Rashi will explain it, based on his explanation of gneva achat and shtei gnevot. Tosfot, on the other hand, will say, what is the answer, Mishani? Adam echad de ganav vechazar ganav lo'oto adam. Adam echad means that he stole from this individual and then stole from him again. Nimkar ad shishalem lo. You keep selling him until he pays off the debt. Kol ha'gnevot. Dainu shapir b'gnevato. Because that is his gneva. All the thieveries he had from this one individual, he has to repay. Aval b'shnei b'nei adam, enu nimkar v'nishneh. By two different people, he will not be sold again. So Tosafot continues with the shita that the difference between gneva achat and shtei gnevot is that by gneva achat you would be sold multiple times. By shtei gnevot, you would not be sold. So what the Baal Tosafot say is, gneva achat allows you to be sold multiple times. Shtei gnevot, according to Rava, you cannot be sold multiple times. And similar in the answer, adam echad, by one person, you can be sold multiple times to make amends to that one person. On the other hand, shnei b'nei adam, when it's two different people, equivalent to two gnevot, you can't be sold twice. That's Tosafot's explanation. Rashi, following his interpretation, says, gneva achat, you can be sold only once. By shtei gnevot, you can be sold multiple times because they're two different acts. And the same thing with adam echad versus shnei b'nei adam. By one person, or adam echad means that you go to din one time. Adam echad doesn't literally mean one person, it just means that you're brought to court. You're prosecuted in one time. When you're prosecuted at that time, you can only be punished once to be put into slavery one time. But if you're prosecuted multiple times, each of those times would open up the possibility that you could be put back into servitude as an evidence. According to Rashi, all that matters is how many times you have a day in court. That's really what determines. According to Tosafot, it has to do with how many people you stole from. So according to Rashi, when you consolidate it, that limits your ability to sell them once. Whereas for Tosafot, as long as it's from one person, you can sell them in multiple times, even if they're multiple gnevot. So the consolidation of the cases, according to Rashi, will allow you only to sell once. According to Tosafot, it will allow you to sell multiple times, as long as it's Adam Echad. Once you get Shnei B'nei Adam, then you can't sell them in. Tana Banan. So now we have a Braita, which is the premise for Tosafot Shita as to why he disagrees with Rashi. Gnevo elef v'shavecha meishmeot. He stole 1,000, but he's only worth 500, meaning that if he's sold in, he will only garner 500. Nimkar, because they have a nimkar. You can get sold in, and then he's sold again until he gets to the 1,000 that he owes. Now you can see here there's an aleph in the gra. The gra over here says that the Rambam's girsa was different. That the girsa that Rambam was, that the girsa here is that if he's worth 1,000 And then if he stole 1,000, he's worth 500. You sell him once, and that's it. You don't sell him again. That's the girsa of the Rambam. That will have nafkamino until you read the rest of the Gemara, obviously. Gnevo chamesh meot v'shav elef. If he stole 500, and now he's worth 1,000, enu nimkar klal. He cannot be sold whatsoever, because his price exceeds the value, and you can't enslave him and put him into servitude for more than he sold. Rabbi Elazar omer, imaya gnevo keneged memkaro nimkar. If his gneva equals his sale price, he can be sold. Bimlav enu nimkar. And if not, he cannot be sold. So now, according to the way that the Rishonim, or the Kirsa that we have of Rashi, then the Tanakhama believes as long as his value is lower or less than the amount that he stole, you can sell him in multiple times to garner the amount that you need. On the other hand, if his value exceeds that which he stole, then you can't sell him in. According to Rabbi Lazar, it's narrow and limited, which is you can't only sell him in an instance where it's exactly equal, where the value of the Eved and the Gneva are equivalent. So that's the way that you would read according to Rashi. According to the Rambam, who says, even the Tana Kama says that when Gnevo Elef, Vishavet Chamesh Meot, Nimkar, he can be sold once, but he can't be sold again, then the Tanakhama seems almost identical to Rabbi Eliezer. The way that the Rambam explains it, there are nuances on this Rambam, but the way they explain it is that the Braita is talking about the second sale. Which is that, exactly like the Tanakhama says, that Nimkar, Ve'enu Chozer V'Nimkar, he can be sold once, but he can't be sold twice. So then, Gnevo Chameshim of Shavelev, Enum Nimkar Kalal, cannot sold at all. Then Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Maya Gnevo Kenegem Emkro, Nimkar, Vimlav Enu Nimkar. Nimkar means he can be sold the first time for sure, but then he can be sold again. But in love, if it's not equal, then he can't be sold the second time. So that's the way to read this. Or another way to read it is that we demand that the Adon forgive the excess amount. You can be sold in the first time, but you can't be sold in the second time. I mean, that's the discussion here. So you can generate a scenario where it's equal, not just simply by chance or perchance it was equal, but in a case where it exceeds the value, we demand, according to Rabbi Elazar, that the Adon forgives the excess amount. And by forgiving the excess amount, you can be sold in once, but you can't be sold in the second time. Because when you forgive the excess amount, it's equal. And that equivalence allows you to sell them in. And then, that's it. You're done. On the other hand, according to the Tanakhama, where your requirements or obligation exceeds the Chamesh Meot, you're sold in for the Chamesh Meot, and then you can't be sold again. But you're sold in the first time, irrespective of the fact that the outstanding obligation is there. And that'll be the difference between whether you need it to be equal, you have to have the Adon forgive the money up front, or be exactly equal. Or can you just sell them in for the amount the first time, and even though it doesn't reach the total value, that'll be the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer, according to that Girsa. So, Amar Rava, Behad Zechinu Rabbi Eliezer the Rabbonon. Rabbi Eliezer over here really trumps the Rabbonon. Tabayshna Gnevo Chamesh Meot V'Shav Elef. Why should it make a difference? If he stole 500 and he's worth 1,000, then Nimkar, that he's not sold. The Nimkar Kulo Amachmana V'Lo Chetzio. The reason being, because it says that he is sold, but not half of him. So you have to sell the whole person. And that only works where there's an equation of equivalence between the theft or the obligation and his worth. So too, when you're sold in, you have to be sold for the entirety of the theft that you did, not a portion of the theft. Just like we demand that the whole Eved Ivri be sold in, so too we demand that the whole Gneva be covered by his sale. And therefore, Rava says, Blessed's opinion is, it's only when the equation is equal, because the drasha says it's got to be the whole Gneva and the whole person. That only happens when you have the equal amounts of his worth to his Gneva. Again, maybe you can simulate, as we said before, Rabbi Lezer's Shita by having the Adon forgive the excess amount and make the equation equal. But nevertheless, he says Rabbi Lezer's logic seems much stronger than the Chachamim's, because according to Chachamim, why do you differentiate between when you stole more and then you can be sold in multiple times versus a case where you stole less than your value where you can't be sold in? Why do you differentiate in that breakdown? And you can redeem her against his will. Who is the his will over here that she can be redeemed against? Against the will of the Adon, you can redeem the Amai Vriya. What is the circumstance here? Divna le shtara adameha. That we write an IOU on the value that she is. So it goes, Amai, why can you compel him to do this? Nokit marganita biode. Yavin le chaspa. He's holding onto a diamond. And now you're replacing that with a shard of pottery. Or in other words, while the Amai Vriya is there, he gets her output. She has utility to him and being in servitude to him as an Amai Vriya. Now you're going to demand of him that he release the Amai Vriya and you give him back a piece of paper that says I owe you, which is basically worthless because unless she can make whole on it or pay it out, now he's left with a piece of paper that has no guarantees and not worth anything instead of having the Amai Vriya. So why can you compel him, or why does he have to even accept that? He has real utility and value in his hands, and you're handing him nothing. You're handing him an IOU, which is worth nothing. So why should he have to accept it? It's one thing if he agrees to accept something like that, but why should we be able to compel him to take an IOU in place of the Amai Vriya he has there? It's a nice lashon over here. The Amai Vriya, who's this diamond, this jewel in hand, versus the IOU, which is this worthless shard of pottery. The reason that you can redeem her is because it's a negative. It casts aspersions on the family that there's this Amai Vriya here. Whether that's because it was considered inappropriate to sell a young girl to an Adon, or because it shows or demonstrates the financial stress on the family. For whatever reason, the Pagam Mishpacha demands, or we demand of the father to redeem the girl in that instance. We wouldn't recommend this as a course of action unless a person is pushed, which is the truth. The loch is that a person may not sell his daughter as an Amai Vriya unless he is basically on the verge of bankruptcy. He has no money. If he has money, we will demand of him that he use the money rather than monetize his daughter. That the Torah is accepting of. I mean, if you put her into a proper marriage, then that's fine. The case of Kiddushin, that's fine because you're putting her into a stable, proper relationship. The problem of an Amai Vriya is you're putting her into a somewhat precarious position where she could be working for him, she could be married to him, he may not marry her, and then she comes out, and then she has to get married later. It's not a great circumstance or situation for the young girl. So by the Eved Ivri, we should also compel the family because of the Pagam Mishpacha. So here it's interesting. First of all, we don't compel the father, obviously, because the father's not relevant over here. It's the Eved Ivri sold himself into slavery. Here we demand of the family to redeem him for the Pagam Mishpacha. Now, how do you demand of the family to redeem him? It's not even clear that an Eved Ivri can be redeemed. The only ways where we find that an Eved Ivri could be redeemed against the will of the owner is when he sold himself to a Nachri. When Eved Ivri sells there, the Torah specifically prescribes that relatives have to come and redeem him. And there we would compel them. Irrespective of Pagam Mishpacha, we would compel them to try to redeem him. So then what exactly is the Gemara speaking about here that Nechfinu l'bnei Mishpacha, that we force the family to redeem him? First of all, is there such a vehicle of redemption? We don't even know about a vehicle like this. And number two is, what is their obligation over here to redeem him? So a lot of the Rishonim either change the gears a little bit or explain Nechfinu l'bnei Mishpacha to say that not that they we compel them to redeem him, but rather we compel them to lend money to him so that he can buy his freedom, that he can buy his way out and do it through Giron Kesef, which is a vehicle that we know the Eved Ivri has at his disposal. And therefore, it's Giron Kesef that's working here, but we demand of the Bnei Mishpacha to provide the funds for the Giron Kesef. That's one way to deal with it. So now, the problem is, Hadar Azil Mezav Nafshe. There's no protection over here, which is, if we force a redemption of the Eved Ivri, whether you take that literally, or you say through Giron Kesef, this individual can be a repeat offender by selling himself back into slavery again. He's under his own auspices, and he can just sell himself right back in. As soon as he comes out, he can sell himself right back in. And then what, you're going to compel the Bnei Mishpacha. So over there, there's no reason to compel the Bnei Mishpacha, because even if it brings a solution, the solution is only temporary, where he's going to just put himself back in the same predicament again. And then what, you're going to force the relatives to do this again? Or if we said we force the Bnei Mishpacha to take his money and give it to him and to buy himself out, well, as soon as he buys himself out, he can resell himself into slavery. By the daughter, since the father does not have the auspices, we'll see in a second, to resell the daughter, therefore, it is a mechanism that is protective. Hachanami. Hadar azil mizaminlo. Here too, the father will sell her back in once we force him to redeem her. Haftani, and in nimkeret vinishneit. That's what we said in the Braita, that an ama ivriya cannot be sold twice. Umani, Rabbi Shimon hi. And this is according to Rabbi Shimon, which we're going to see in the Braita in a second, that that's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that she cannot be sold twice. Since she can't be sold twice, this is a good solution to the problem, because we force the father to redeem her, then she's not going to end up in the same predicament again, because he can't sell her back into being an ama ivriya. Now Rashi claims over here, im yesh lo kofin uto upode uta, that if the father has the means, we force him to buy her out because he has the means and he shouldn't leave it as an ama ivriya because of the b'gam mishpacha. The difficulty with that is, if he has the means, he wasn't able to or wasn't rightfully selling her into being an ama ivriya in the first place. So that's why other Rishonim don't explain like Rashi, which is, we compel the av because he has money, but what we do is we compel the father either to monetize assets and to force him to have the money or to do something to free his daughter. Meaning that the compelling of the father over here is not simply because he's sitting there with the money in his pocket and he has to make a decision, but rather we force him to take on a situation or create a situation in which he can redeem her, even though it may not be going in his best interest, or we're forcing him to sell illiquid assets, we still would compel him in that case to redeem the daughter. All right, Tanya, Mocher adam et bito liishut vishoneh. Person can sell his daughter to ishut, meaning to marriage, and then do it again. Lishivchut vishoneh. Or he can sell her in as an ama ivriya, and sell her again as an ama ivriya. So, the case of ishut, it has to be a case where it's from the erusin. He married it off with kiddushin, and for whatever reason, the kiddushin were terminated, that either is because the husband passed away, or she was divorced from him, but only from erusin, not from nisuin. The father still has auspices over the girl. He can marry her off again and collect the kesef kiddushin. By an ama ivriya, if he sold her as an ama ivriya, and either the adon passes away, or the 6 years expire and she's still a ktana, then he can resell her as an ama ivriya once again. Lishut achar shivchut. If he sold her to be an ama ivriya, and then she was released from being an ama ivriya, he can still marry her off and collect the kesef kiddushin. Aval, the one case that it doesn't is lo lishivchut achar ishut. What he can't do is sell her as an ama ivriya after she's been married, after she has gone out to erusin. If he created kiddushin for her, he can no longer sell her as an ama ivriya. In essence, what it's saying is that once she's reached the, call it the higher level of relationship, which is ishut, he can't downgrade her and say, now you're going to be an ama ivriya. So if she was an ama ivriya, she can continue to be an ama ivriya. If she was an ama ivriya, she can be graduated up to kiddushin. Or if she was kiddushin, she can have a repeat of the kiddushin. The one thing that can't be done is kiddushin and then ama ivriya, according to the Tanakama, according to the Rabbanan. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kishem she'in adam mocher bito l'shivchut achar ishut. Just like a woman cannot be sold, or a young girl cannot be sold as an ama ivriya after marriage, kach en adam mocher bito l'shivchut achar shivchut. I can also can't sell her as an ama ivriya twice. Ubeplukta dahani tanei. And this is parallel to another machloket tanaim that we have. You have here the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, basically arguing about whether a girl can be sold as an ama ivriya twice. Tanya, bebigdo ba. So here it says, when an ama ivriya is sold in Parshat Mishpatim, it says about the owner. Imra'a b'enei aduneha. If she is considered unworthy or unpleasing in the eyes of her master, then asher lo ye'ada, and that he does not take her as a wife. Vehefta, or that the Gemara Darshan says being ability to be giron kesef. He may not sell her to a foreign nation, bibigdoba, seemingly the meaning is, where he rejects her, where he does not accept her as a wife. So now here, this is the machloket here, that bibigdoba, how do you explain the word bibigdoba? Let's see, it says here, bibigdoba, kaven, shepereish talito aleha. Once he puts his talit over her, so that's the word bigdo now from the word beget, Shuv in Rashai the Mochra Dibi Rabbi Akiva. He's no longer allowed to sell her anymore. That is the words of Rabbi Akiva. The imagery or the idea of placing the talit on the woman is that he is marrying her. So after marriage, he can no longer sell her. La'om nachri lo yimshol l'mochra. La'om nachri means to a foreigner. The foreigner here means as an ama ivriat, as a shifcha. He cannot sell her la'om nachri bibig doba. Once she's already been married, once she's had kiddushin, that is the way that Rabbi Akiva is wearing this, and we'll see in a second that he's reading bibig doba as beged. Once his beged has been placed on her, not necessarily beged in the sense of nisuin, like the talit placed on her, but that he is responsible for her, meaning her share ksut ve'ona. Once he becomes responsible for the girl, or there's been kiddushin here, then there's no longer any selling her as an ama ivriya. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, bibig doba, kevin shebagadba. He's reading bibig doba as begida, meaning a rebellion or rejection. So since he was bogeyed by her, meaning that he rejected her or pushed her into being an ama ivriya, shuvin rashay lemochra. He no longer can sell her as an ama ivriya. So you can see here how Rabbi Eliezer lines with Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says once she sold an ama ivriya, she cannot be sold again as an ama ivriya. Similar to what Rabbi Eliezer is suggesting over here, that once you have a begida, it's selling as an ama ivriya, you cannot do a begida again. You cannot sell her out again. Once she's been rejected as an ama ivriya and sold as an ama ivriya, she cannot be sold again. Whereas Rabbi Akiva is like the Chachamim of the Tanakama, which is that big dovah is bebeged. Once she's been bekidushin, then she cannot be sold as an ama ivriya. But without kidushin, ama ivriya can be sold in more than once, and that will parallel the other machloket. But my kamiflege, what is the machloket of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva premised on? Rabbi Eliezer savar yesh aim limisoret. Rabbi Akiva savar yesh aim limikra. So now, this is a machloket that we see in other places, which is when a word is written in a certain manner, which, had you not had nikudot, you would read it one way. But with the nikudot, you actually read it a different way. So then you have an aim limikra, according to Rashi, means the way that you read it. Aim limisoret is the way that it looks in the pasuk, the way that you would read it based on what it looks like in the pasuk, not the way that we are told to read it. That's the way Rashi learns this. Again, we're going to come out that Rashi is argued on by Rishonim, who come up with two different ways to deal with Rashi's issue, or the issue of what Rashi is saying here. First of all, Rashi explains that Yesh Im LeMikra is the sheet of Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and Im LeMisoret is the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. And therefore, Rashi wants to parallel their opinions over here to say the same thing, which is that Rabbi Akiva is saying Im LeMikra, the way that you read it governs, and Aim LeMisoret is the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, which is the way that it is written is the important idea. And what Rashi says is that when you have the word big dough requires a yud in order for the chirik to be pronounced. Beged, big dough, meaning the clothing, should have been spelled with the yud if you wanted the chirik, the E sound, to be made. The fact that there's a yud absent means that without the yud there, you would read it as bivagdo, ba. And Rashi gives you other verbs like that. For instance, shmia, which is shamo. The active verb is shamo with a kamatz or a chataf kamatz, as he calls it underneath the shin. So to over here, you would read this as bivagdo ba, which is the active form of being bogeid, that he is basically rejecting her. So what he says is, the aim the misoret, the way that the word is spelled in the Torah, you would read it as bivagdo ba, or the rejection. That's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Yesh aim lemisoret. So you read it as bivagdo ba, the rejection. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says aim lemikra. The way that you read it is what governs over here. How do you read it? Bivigdo. Bigdo refers to a beged and not to a begida. And that's how Rashi explains the difference in their opinions over here. And you can see that Rashi spells it out. There are three long Rashis here that spell out exactly how it works out over here in their opinions. The problem with Rashi's explanation, there are numerous problems. One of the main problems is the fact that he says that when it comes to big dough, when it refers to beged, you'd always spell it with a yud. The problem is that by Yosef, with Eishet Potifar, it says, v'titpaseyu b'big dough. She grabbed onto his clothing. Over there, the big dough is spelt without a yud. And so you see the word beged or the word bigud is used in the Torah even without a yud. And therefore, that undermines or ruins this explanation of Rashi, because it is not the default that beged is spelled with a yud. It could even be spelled without a yud. And therefore, now you have no proof between Aim Lamasorot and Aim Lamikra, because even if it's spelled this way, it could still be read as big dough. Tosfot asks that question. So therefore, Tosfot says, Lekach nira the Rabbeinu Tam. For this question and numerous other questions on Rashi, he says, the Ein Derech HaGmara, Lagdim Divrei Rabbi Akiva, the Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Shaya Rabo. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus is the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. And that means that whenever you are quoted in a bright or in a situation, Rabbi Eliezer should be quoted before Rabbi Akiva, which is the way that you find it all over Shas and throughout the Mishnayot. Therefore, he thinks the Rabbeinu Tam says the Girsun HaGemara is backwards. If you look at the top of the Amud, it says, Kevin Shaperish Talito Elav Shuvin Rashad Mochra Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That means that the bright is quoting Rabbi Akiva's Shita before the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says, Kevin Shaperish Talito Elav Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. He says that's the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kevin Shabagadba, that the Begida is the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. And then, this is the explanation of their opinions. Rabbi Eliezer, Savar Yesh Eim LeMesoret. And therefore, Mesoret Avi Lashon Beged, Dainu Prisat Talit, Mileotiv, Bibogdo, Bibav, O Bibigdo, Biyud. May that Rabbi Eliezer then will learn, like what the Shita of Rabbi Akiva is now, which is that the beged, the word bigdo over here means beged. How do I know that it's beged? That is the misora. The misora is the word here means beged, and does not mean a rejection or a rebellion, because it's not spelt with a vav, which would have made it clear that it was bugade, someone who is rejecting or rebelling. It's not spelt with a yud, would make it obvious that it's bigdo, but rather, it's spelled without either of those. But the Mesora tells us that we should read it, we should understand it as meaning beged. Afagav, dibishamo lo kotuv bavav, haino mishum delek elamite. So even though Tosfot says Rashi brought a proof, the fact that bagda, bogeid, can be spelled without a vav when you have a kamatz there, and that would be, you could read it over here, Tosfot makes it clear that context matters. In all these cases, how you read the word has to do with the context. In certain contexts, it's obvious how to read the word. To read the word when it's shamo, it's clear there that it's the active verb shamo, even though there's no vav. Over here, it's not clear how to read the word. And when it's not clear how to read the word, then the Torah would have to give you the vav, or give you the information to make it work. The fact that it didn't, already opens up the possibility of an alternate drasha. And therefore, the aim of Mesorot is to read it as beged. Rabbi Kiva Savar, yesh aim lemikra, hainu lashon begidya, that has a lashon of rejection. Di lashon beged, havle lemeimar bebegdo. It should have been bebegdo. To me, beged yomar begdo. Kamo neged is negdo. O michelev is chelbo. So the fact that it doesn't say begdo, but rather bigdo, already changes the meaning of the word from being beged to bugade. The aim lemikra, because of the way that we read it, which is what he's saying. The way we read it with the chirik shows you that it's not beged, but rather bugade. That's exactly what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Over here, going to Rabbeinu Tam. So that's one way to deal with it. Afterwards, Tosfot brings another interpretation to deal with Rashi. Happens to make a lot of sense. This interpretation seems to me this is probably the right explanation of the pasuk. The problem is that it's totally absent in the Braita. Which is, if you look in the pasuk, it says, Imra abeine adunah, if she is not pleasing in her master's eyes, asher lo yi'ada, that he took her as a wife. Over there, the lo is spelled lamid vav, asher lo yi'ada, that he married her. The kri is with the lamid vav. The ktiv is a lamid aleph, which is lo means asher lo yi'ada, that he does not marry her. Obviously, there's a big difference between the ktiv, which says that he doesn't marry her, and the lo, the lamid vav, which says that he does marry her. But that is exactly aim la mikra, aim la misoret, which is that the misoret, or the misora is that it's written as a lamed aleph, that he did not get married to her. On the other hand, the kriya is with the lamed vav, that he did get married to her. Then you would say, ve'am nachri lo yimshal, he cannot sell her again. Well, depending on how you read the first half of the pasuk, will then impact on the second half of the pasuk, which is, if you read it as the ktiv, which is written as lamed aleph, when he didn't marry her, he's still not allowed to sell her. Which means that in the Aim Lemisoret, he can't sell her again because Asher lo yada. He did not marry her. So she was an Amma Ivriya. She can no longer be sold as an Amma Ivriya again. And that's what Eim LeMesoret is, according to Rabbi Eliezer. You read it based on the Ktiv. The Ktiv says, no marriage. Even when there's no marriage, you can't sell her again as an Amma Ivriya. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva goes Eim LeMikra. How do we read it? Read it as Lamed Vav. Lamed Vav means he did marry her. That means the only time he can't sell her as an Amma Ivriya is when he did marry her. And that is the simplest way to read the Pasuk. Tosafot brings it at the end here. It's the easiest way to explain the Machloket over here. Now, how does that jive with the Braita? The Braita never makes mention of the word Lo at all. What you can say is that the change in the word Lo will impact on how you read the word Beged at the end of the Pasuk. If you read it as Asher Lo Yada Lamed Vav, that he did marry her, then you would read the big Doba at the end of the Pasuk as being Beged. Whereas, if you read it as the Ktiv, which is Lamed Aleph, Asher Lo Yada, that he did not marry her, then you'd read the big Do at the end of the Pasuk as being Bigud, or a rejection of the woman. So that's the way that the Rishonim deal with that inconsistency in the Braita, is if you explain it based on the Kri and Ktiv in the Pasuk, then it would impact on the interpretation of the word Beged at the end of the Pasuk. So the Braita is bringing you the derivative, which is the impact of how you read it, which is Beged, or the result of reading it as low or low with an aleph or above impacts on how you read the word beged at the end. So those are three different ways to explain this machlok between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. We had Rashi's interpretation, which is the girsa that we have in the Gemara. We have the Rabbi Deinu Tam's girsa, which flips Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer's positions and then explains the Eim LeMesoret, Eim LeMikra differently. Or we had the final interpretation here, which is brought by a lot of Rishonim, which is the difference between the Kri and the Ktiv of the word low in the Pasuk, and that's the Machloket between them. Gemara says, how does that relate to our Machloket we just saw between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim? Because the way that we have a Machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer is that Rabbi Akiva believes that if there's Kiddushin, there's no Amma Ivriya afterwards. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if there was Amma Ivriya, there is no Amma Ivriya afterwards. They disagree fundamentally. Rabbi Akiva says, if she marries, she can't be sold as an Amma Ivriya. But that means if she was sold as an Amma Ivriya, she could be sold again as an Amma Ivriya. Rabbi Eliezer says, if she's sold on an Amma Ivriya, she cannot be sold as an Amma Ivriya again. But if she was married, she could be sold as an Amma Ivriya afterwards. Rabbi Shimon says both of those are problematic. So that's what the Gemara says here. Rabbi Shimon Savar, Yeshem LeMikra, Ula Misoret. Rabbi Shimon reads it both ways. Rabbi Shimon reads it both the way Rabbi Akiva reads it and the way Rabbi Eliezer reads it. And therefore, the result is, if she had Kiddushin, she cannot be sold as an Amma Ivriya. If she was sold as an Amma Ivriya, she cannot be sold as an Amma Ivriya again. And so that's what Rabbi Shimon's opinion is. Rashi over here says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to indicate that Eim LeMesoret and Eim LeMikra are mutually exclusive positions. So how is it possible here that Rabbi Shimon is taking on both positions? So Rashi says it over here, Tosafot in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where it discusses this on Daf Dalet, and he says over there that there seems to be a stira on the positions of these Tanaim. Sometimes they're saying Eim LeMikra, sometimes they're saying Eim LeMesoret, and they're not necessarily consistent. So Tosafot in the end of there comes up with different parameters that are determined. But in the end he says something very similar to what Rashi says over here is that the Gemara and Sanhedrin, in the case where they're dashing about Sukkah, how many walls the Sukkah has based on the Eim LeMesoret, Eim LeMikra, there the two opinions are mutually exclusive. You can't have Eim LeMikra and the Eim LeMesoret because you can't have a sukkah that's both three and four walls. I mean, it either has to be the minimum is four or the minimum is three. You can't have it be both of them. They're mutually exclusive. There you have to take a position, whether it's Eim LeMesoret or Eim LeMikra. But in other places in Shas where both are plausible explanations, it could be that certain Tanaim take up the position that both of them are true, like Rabbi Shimon does over here. Rabbi Shimon's willing to take Eim LeMikra and Eim LeMesoret, even though by the Gemara and Sanhedrin we don't do that because Eif Shar LeKayim Shneihem. Here where it's Eif Shar LeKayim Shneihem, Rabbi Shimon could be of that opinion that both Eim LeMesoret and Eim LeMikra are valid interpretations of the Pasuk, and you can take both of those explanations and have a halacha that derives from both explanations because they're not mutually exclusive. Right, so now, Boi Rabba Baravua, Yehud. When the Adon decides to marry the woman, again, this sugya is going to be discussed much more extensively later on in the Perek about exactly how Yehud works. Here the Gemara makes the assumption you kind of know what happens later on in the Perek about how Yehud works. We'll see that in a second. But once the Adon performs Yehud, he uses the purchase of the Amad Ivriya in order to generate Kiddushin or Nisuin. That's what the Gemara wants to know. Nisuin osa or Erusin osa? Does it make him married to her as if it's a consummated marriage? Or does it simply replace Erusin or Kiddushin? Nafkamina. What's the nafkamina between them? L'yorsha ulatameila ulahafer nidarea. Now again, these seem obvious. We know that these are the differences between Kiddushin and Nisuin, which is that if it's only Kiddushin, he does not inherit her. If he's a Kohen, he doesn't become Tamei for her. And he doesn't have the right to be Mefer Nidarim without the father in cases of Kiddushin. In the case of Nisuin, he does inherit her. He is Mitamei La if he's a Kohen. And he has full rights to nullify her Nidarim. So these are obvious differences between them. The ones that are not mentioned here, which are the standard differences between Kiddushin and Nisuin, are the two things, Maisei Yadayim and Mizonot. That's what's throughout the Mishnayot, that's what we're talking about. When is the husband responsible for her Mizonot? And when does he get her Maisei Yadayim? That's the key difference between Erusin and Nisuin. Why is that not mentioned here? Because either way, the Adon has her Maisei Yadayim and Mizonot are on him. Because she's an Amah Ivriya. So even if he only has Kiddushin over here, the Maisei Yadayim are to him, because until he consummates with Nisuin, she's still an Amah Ivriya in that sense. And therefore, the output, the Maisei Yadayim to him, and the Mizonot are in him, he has to take care of her. So the Maisei Yadayim and Mizonot, which are your standard nafkaminot between Kiddushin and Nisuin, don't apply here. That's why the Gemara went to these other items, which are Yerusha, Tum'ah, and Hafer Nidareh, which are also nafkaminot we know. The other possibility is Truma. Could have been a difference here by a Kohen, which is, by a Kohen, the Truma only goes to effect by the Nisuin, doesn't go into effect by Erusin. And that would also be a nafkamina. It's a question that you asked, which I think the Tosfot Arosh, for the Meiri, rejects that as a difference here between the Kiddushin and the Erusin, because the din of Truma is only Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. Technically, from the time of Erusin, she is entitled to eat Truma. Why do we say no? For two reasons. Either Mishum Simpon, or Mishum that she'll give it to her relatives. Over here, those fears don't exist, because she is living with the Adon already. So the fact that she's going to give to her brothers and to her father or her sisters, none of that has application over here, and therefore she would get Truma from the time of Erusin, and that nafkamina doesn't exist in this case. Therefore, the Gemara narrows down these three issues, which will be a nafkamina. Mai, what's the din? Tashma, bebig doba. Bebig doba, kevin sheperish talito alea, shuv einu rashai the mochra. So once he's put his talit on her, he can no longer sell her. Zvunehu delo mezavinla. He cannot sell her again, meaning the father. If, whatever reason this falls apart, he cannot sell her. Ha yehude meyayidla. But what he can do is marry her off. Now here, the yehude meyayidla doesn't mean yehud in the traditional sense of yehud. It means yehud, he can give her kiddushin. He can create kiddushin again. Which means that the father, after the Adon has created yehud with this girl, which is he places talit on her, he has the right to marry her off again. He does not have the right to sell her as a ama ivriya. Be'amart nisuin osa. If you tell me that the yehud makes nisuin, kevin d'nisei tshuvenein davia reshutba. Once she is consummated in marriage, reached the point of nisuin, the father is severed from that relationship completely. He no longer has any rights in the daughter. The fact that, the possibility that this falls apart, for instance, he does the adon does yehud with her and then passes away. So then she's released and she goes back to her father. Their father then can generate kiddushin. How can he generate kiddushin? Only if what happened before was only kiddushin. If it was already nisuin, he wouldn't have a right to generate kiddushin again. Elalav shmamina erusin osa. It's pretty clear here that it seems like yehud only makes erusin. Amar Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak halcha bekiddushin d'almakoi. Here we're talking about general kiddushin, which is that the pasuk is clearly talking about an ama ivriya, and when it says here the am nachri lo yom sholem ochra bevig doba, in context it's speaking about yehud, a case of an adon. But Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says that the drasha is not about the case of ama ivriya. The drasha is about a generic case of marriage, which is that am nachri lo yom sholem ochra, she may not be sold as a shivcha, an ama ivriya, once a talit has been placed on her. Means once kiddushin has been generated, she can no longer be sold as a shivcha. Nothing to do with an ama ivriya. This is a regular case of kiddushin. That's what he means. It's kiddushin amakai. V'ochi kamar. Kevin shemasra avia lamish nitchayev b'sheira k'suta v'onota. That once the father gives her over to someone who becomes obligated in the obligations of a husband to a wife, sheira k'suta v'onota, shuv ein yachol demokra. he can no longer sell her as an amayivriya. Meaning once he's generated kiddushin with a party that now would become obligated in shirak suta v'nonata, he no longer has the right to sell her as an amayivriya. Now if it falls apart, he can remarry her off to someone else. But if it falls apart, he can't then sell her off as an amayivriya. But then you can't prove anything from this about Yehud, because the pasuk's not speaking about a Yehud according to Rav Nachman Yitzchok. Tashma, ein mochra likrovim. He's not allowed to sell an amayivriya to relatives. Bishim Rabbi Eliezer amru mochra likrovim, you can sell her to relatives. Bishavin, and they agree. Shemochra almana lekohen gadol. If she's a widow, you can sell her to a kohen gadol. Grusha v'chalutza, if she's divorced, or v'chalitza, you can be sold to a kohen ejot. The issue that is being discussed here, again, we'll discuss it again later on in the perek, is the fact that an amayivriya, the main goal is that the adon marries her, or the son of the adon marries her. If it's impossible for them to marry her because they are relatives, then does that fail? Does that cause a failure in the selling of the amayivriya? What's clear is that the Tanna Kamma believes yes, and therefore ein mochra likrovim. Rabbi Elazar says, no, that's just one mechanism of an amayivriya. If that mechanism fails, there's still other mechanisms there, the son, or the fact that she can just remain there for the 6 years. See my name, there are other ways for her to get out. Yehud is not the only goal here, and therefore you could sell her as an amayivriya. But they both agree is that if they sell him into a position where kiddushin is possible, even though it's illegal, like for instance, an amanato kohen gadol, then she's allowed to be sold as an amayivriya in that case. Obviously the question is, Hey almana, hey chidomi. How do we have a girl who's a ktana? Because he's selling her as an amayivriya. He can only make his daughter as an amayivriya while she's a ktana. That means she's an almana while she's a ktana. She's an almana when she's a ktana. The father no longer has auspices over here because she's only an almana if ilayim et kodesh nafsha. If it's the fact that she married herself off, almana karila. How could it be that she's called an almana? She has no action. Her action is meaningless. She, as a ktana, cannot marry herself off. That means that if the husband passed away, then nothing happened because she was never married. And that means she's not an almana either. Elo de kajavia. Must be a case where her father married her off. Mi matzi mizavin-law. Wait a minute. If he created kiddushin for her once, you just told me that once there's kiddushin, there's no selling as an ama ivriya anymore. Vayin adam mocheret bito l'shivchut acharishut. We've already established the fact that after Yishut, after marriage, you cannot be sold as a Ama Ivriya, with the exception of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Vama Rabbi Amram, Rama Rabbi Yitzchak, Hacha Bikidushe Yehud. You know how we generated it here? Through Yehud. She became an Almana through Yehud, which is that the father did not generate the Kiddushin. The Kiddushin were derived from here being sold as an Ama Ivriya. She was sold as an Ama Ivriya. The Adon generated Yehud. And this is according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. This again assumes you understand or know the Gemara further on, which is how Yehud works. There are two possibilities of how the Adon can marry this girl. One possibility is that the monies that he paid to make her an amayivriya double as the monies of Kiddushin. And basically those monies, he now says, instead of them being for payment to buy you as an amayivriya, they become your kesef Kiddushin. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the remaining work that the girl owes to him as an amayivriya, his forgiveness of that work generates the consideration for the marriage. So there are the two ways that you can create the yehud. Well, what he's saying now is that the situation, the circumstance here is a case where she got married through yehud, according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Damar ma'ot rishonot, lav lekiddushim nitnu. That the original monies were not given for kiddushin, meaning the second way that we explained it. And the way that the kiddushin are created over here is not by the purchase price of the amayivriya, but rather through the forgiveness of the remaining work. Now, if that's the case, then the father has nothing to do with the kiddushin over here. Because it's not the monies that were given originally that now are changed into kesef kiddushin, and it's as if the father married her off, but rather it's the adon's action that marry her off. Via Marz Nisuinosa, if you say to us that Yehud makes her into a Nisua, Kevin Shinisa, Shuven Levia Rashutba. Once she's fully married and has a consummated marriage, if that marriage is terminated, the father has no rights in her. Vela Mai, so what's the case is Erusinosa, you're gonna tell me if it's that it makes it's Erusin, Bishavin, Shemochra. And now everybody agrees that he can sell her off. So Gemara says, Va Ein Adam Mocher Bitol Shivcha Harishut. But you have the problem is now that there's marriage, and post-marriage, he's selling her as an Amma Ivriya, which is not allowed. So the answer is, Alamai Dechol Meimar. So what are you going to say here? Shainu Erusin Dida, Merusin De Aviyah. There's a difference between her Erusin and her father's Erusin. So what happens here is that there's a difference in the way that the Kiddushin were generated. In the case where the father generates the Kiddushin, we say that there's no longer a right to become an Amma Ivriya after that point in time. Can't become an Amma Ivriya because he had Ishut. He created Kiddushin. The Pasuk says that you're not allowed to sell her after Bebig Doba. Once there's a begin, once a talit placed on her, he can no longer sell her as an Amma Ivriya. So he sold her for Ishut. He took Kesed Kiddushin, the father. He can no longer send her as an Amma Ivriya. In the case where he sells her as an Amma Ivriya, and then Yehud takes place, there was Kiddushin generated. We said here there are two ways for that Kiddushin to work. Either the original money doubles as the Kesed Kiddushin. In that case, it would be the equivalent of the father marrying her off and giving her Kiddushin, and he wouldn't be able to sell her afterwards. So what must be the case in this machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, where they agree that you can be sold to an Almanah, can be sold to a Kohen Gadol? Must be a case where there was Yehud, but it's according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehud, who says Yehud is not created by the father, but rather by the Adon himself. By his forgiveness of the remaining of work, he generates the consideration for the marriage. And in that sense, the father never married the daughter off. He sold her as an Amma Ivriya. The Adon, or she and the Adon, create the Kiddushin independent of the father. That means if she's widowed from that circumstance, the father can sell her as an Amma Ivriya again, because all he did the first time was sell her as an Amma Ivriya. The second time also can sell her as an Amma Ivriya. The Gemara says, you prove from here is that Yehud only makes Erusin and not Nisuin, because if Yehud makes Erusin, then when the Adon passes away, she returns to the auspices of the father and can sell her again as an Amma Ivriya. On the other hand, if Yehud made Nisuin, she would have terminated completely the relationship with the father. If she's widowed from that circumstance, the father would not have a right to sell her again. So what that shows you is, that case over there of Amunah Kohen Gadol must be done by the case of Yehud. Must be done by Yehud according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that the Yehud is created later on by the Adon. And it shows you that Yehud only creates Erusin, and that's why the father later on, if she is widowed, has the rights or the auspices to sell her again as an Amma HaIvriya. Alright, so that's what the Gemara says. So what you're suggesting now is that the Erusin generated by the father are different than the Erusin that are generated through Yehud, because the father is not a party in a sense to those Erusin, and that's why it does not preclude him from selling her as an Amma HaIvriya afterwards. The Gemara says, well now, if you're suggesting that you can differentiate between his Erusin and the Erusin of the Adon, why don't you say the same thing by Nisuin? Afilu tamei Nisuin osa. Shani Nisuin dida, Nisuin de Avia. There's a difference between her Nisuin and his Nisuin. His Nisuin will terminate their relationship. If he marries her off, and then that's consummated marriage, the father will lose all rights there. On the other hand, if it's created through Yehud, where the father's not a party to that Kiddushin and Nisuin, maybe there he doesn't lose his rights. Mar says, hi, my. You can't compare the cases. Bishlamai Erusin, Merusin, Shani. It makes sense to differentiate between two types of Erusin. Ela Nisuin, Mi Nisuin, Mi Shiny. How could you differentiate between them? Rashi claims the difference is, Mi Shiny, Kevin de Nisuin, Do Raita Ninu, Nafke Legami Mishute. Since Nisuin are a Torah prescribed type of marriage, then no matter how they're created, it terminates or severs the relationship between the daughter and the father. Whether he did it, the father, or whether it was done through Yehud by the Adon, either way, that terminates it. The implications of Rashi are that Erusin are not Doraita, which Tosafot takes issue with. Wait a minute. Erusin are just as Doraita as Nisuin. So how come that's the differential? So Tosafot says, Kedei Yashev Perisha Kuntris, in order to reconcile what Rashi's saying, he explains it slightly differently, which is, Bishlo me ejusim Erusin shani dakati b'shute de'avhi l'chom mile. Chutz me michira. When it comes to Erusin, the daughter remains in the father's auspices, no matter how the Erusin happened, with the exception of the father's ability to resell her as an Amma Ivriya. So even if the father generated Erusin, the daughter is still under his auspices, with the exception of his right to sell her again as an Amma Ivriya. And in the case where it's the Adon, then we're going to say that he also preserves the right to sell her. So the only difference between his Erusin and the Adon's Erusin is whether he has the right to sell her afterwards or not. But as far as everything else is concerned, the father still has rights in his daughter. And therefore, you can make that distinction between Erusin and Erusin. On the other hand, Nisuin, the girl leaves the father's auspices. Whether he generates the Nisuin or the Adon generates the Nisuin, the father no longer has auspices over this girl. But he generates Nisuin, it severs the relationship completely. So too, when the Adam creates Nisuin, it will sever the relationship completely. In essence, the Nisuin is the same Nisuin as the father, and the Erusin is the same Erusin as the father. In either case, they remain in the same status. Erusin, the father still has auspices over his daughter for everything, with exception of then being able to sell as an Amayri afterwards. That one exception, you can get rid of that problem by having the Adon do the Erusin. On the other hand, Nisuin, when the father does it, terminates the relationship. And when the Adon does it, it's also going to terminate the relationship because that's the nature of Nisuin. Erusin and Nisuin by nature are different. And that's exactly what Tosfot is doing, is explaining in the Shita of Rashi as to why there's a difference. Ula Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Da'amar, Da'afilu Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, Ma'ot HaRishonot, Le'kidushin Nitnu. According to Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, who says that Yehud works through the original monies that were paid in, that creates Nisu Kiddushin, or the Yehud here, then how are you going to explain the case of Amanah the Kohen Gadol? Because in that case, the father is basically creating the Kiddushin. So my Mukimla, how are you going to have the case of an Amanah the Kohen Gadol where the father is selling her as an Amah Ivriya? Mukimla ki Rabbi Eliezer. Well, like Rabbi Eliezer, I mentioned that before, with the exception of Rabbi Eliezer, everybody believes after marriage, you can't sell her as an Amah Ivriya. Rabbi Lazar was of the opinion that if she's an Amah Ivriya, you can't sell her again as an Amah Ivriya. But if she was married, then she could be sold as an Amah Ivriya. Damar l'shivchut achar shivchutu d'lo mazi mezavin lo. You can't sell her as an Amah Ivriya twice. Aval l'shivchut achar ishut mazi mezavin lo. Av shivchut as an Amah Ivriya after ishut, that's fine. Rabbi Shimon, remember, took up both Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer's opinions. And in doing so, he incorporated both. But Rabbi Lezer himself only has his opinion, which is no Amah Ivriya after Amah Ivriya. But Amah Ivriya after Kiddushin, no problem. And that's how we explain it. Rashi says, why didn't the Gemara until now use Rabbi Lezer as the author of the Braita? It would have been simple. Rashi says, because Rabbi Lezer shmutehu. Rabbi Lezer was put into Cherem because of the incident by Tanur Shalachnai. And therefore, the Gemara wanted to avoid making the explanation according to Rabbi Eliezer unless it was pushed into a corner like it is here. That's Rashi's explanation, but that's Rashi the Shitato, that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, who flips the opinions and says that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, why did the Gemara wait until now until explain it in the sheet of Rabbi Akiva? According to Rabbeinu Tam, the Girsa would be here, not according to Rabbi Eliezer, but rather according to Rabbi Akiva. So then why didn't it wait? Gemara says, that hashtem hadalukmeik Rabbi Eliezer mishum derabonon the Rabbi Shimon kaiman kavate. The reason being that the Tanakama of Rabbi Shimon holds like whoever the first opinion is in the Braita that we brought, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that is Rabbi Eliezer and not Rabbi Akiva. And so therefore the Gemara tried to keep Rabbi Eliezer as the author all the way through because he is akin to the Chachamim of Rabbi Shimon, which would mean we would paskin that way. In the end, we're forced into a corner, so he explains like Rabbi Akiva, who's not like that opinion of the Chachamim. And so therefore, we have explained it in the end like Rabbi Akiva, because we're pressed against the wall. And that's how the Rabbeinu Tam will explain the reason why the Gemara waited until now to explain it like Rabbi Akiva and didn't do it until here, is because Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim have the same opinion, therefore the Gemara wanted to keep the majority opinion as the main view. Here it switches to the Dat Yachid of Rabbi Akiva, because it's forced to. According to Rashi, the reason they avoided Rabbi Eliezer until now is because he's shmutehu, but now when they're forced into a corner, they use Rabbi Lezer's opinion. Okay, we're going to stop here, 6 lines down on the top of Yutet, Amud Aleph.